my name is Arthur Leek. Arthur is fanned, referred to me as. Well, joined the Black Panther Party as a teenager when I was 19. I have been imprisoned for activities related to that membership. Some people call it political prisoner. I'm not that caring what you call it, but I was one of those people who was held out of behaviors in the 60s and determined to get those folks out because it could very easily be me still there.
Are you willing to share how much time you had to serve in prison?
I was in prison for 7 years.
And what does this personal experience, like having had the experience of being an activist, being in prison for 7 years and now watching people be incarcerated as there's a pandemic, what's the personal kind of fire within you to do something about this?
Well, the fire has been going for in the last 45 years. Many of the people that are still there could have easily been me that's still there. It wasn't fundamentally different. And besides which, the people that are there because they put themselves between this policing that targeted communities, poor communities, communities of color as others, and in some way not worth living.
Thank you. Richard, I'm going to have you introduce yourself, and then I'll ask you both a few other questions.
Sure. My name's Richard Tan. I'm an attorney and organizer with the Labor Action Committee to Free Mumia Abu-Jamal.
In May, you and I spoke, and you were doing an action around that time because you were afraid that at some point there could be an outbreak of COVID-19 in San Quentin. And we know it's happening in prisons around the country. And now talk about where we are now, more than a month later, and what's at stake.
Sure, yeah. We held the car caravan in May, in the immediate aftermath of an outbreak at the prison in Marion, Ohio. And at the time, we said at the rally that the coronavirus would be coming to California and it would tear through the prisons, and then it would tear through the communities around the prisons. And it wasn't really just an issue about our brothers and sisters on the inside, but also about all the working communities on the outside who would be affected by these outbreaks. And, unfortunately, since then, that has come to pass. There have been massive outbreaks in a number of prisons. We were just at Avenal, which is in Kings County. 2 weeks ago, there was a car caravan there. They've tested about 1,500 prisoners, and out of those, 700 plus have the coronavirus. So that's approximately half, you can anticipate, of the population has the coronavirus. And it's the same story over at Chuckawalla Valley Prison over in Riverside, where more than half the prisoners have the coronavirus. They have more than 1,000 cases over there. And the outbreak at San Quentin has been entirely avoidable and entirely the fault of the California Department of Corrections, because what they did was they transferred 121 prisoners over to San Quentin around May 28th. And they claimed that those prisoners didn't have the coronavirus because they had tested negative. But, what they didn't think of, because basically they're incompetent, is those people were all tested weeks before they were actually transferred. And as we found out when from the prisoners at Avenal, after prisoners are tested for the coronavirus, they were immediately returned to the dorms where they previously were, where they could be exposed to anybody else in the dorms who had the coronavirus. So the tests basically meant nothing. The San Francisco Chronicle reported that when some of the prisoners got off the buses to go to San Quentin, that a number of them already had symptoms of the coronavirus, and that's what happened. They caught the coronavirus. It's gotten out from the transferees. It's in the prison now. As of today, there are 91 cases, and there's no stopping it.
91 cases at San Quentin.
91 cases, 91 confirmed cases based on incomplete testing, but yes.
So you did this caravan and you were hoping at that time that you would send a message and that it would be received and that prisoners might be released. So did you see any action after your last action?
There's definitely been some action. It's been very, very far, from what's necessary. The Department of Corrections, previously was releasing prisoners who were close to their release dates, but around the time of our rally, they stopped doing that. Basically what the Department of Corrections is doing is they're taking a whole bunch of largely ineffective measures, to try to protect prisoners from the coronavirus. There's a number of lawsuits about this that are in the federal courts. If you read those briefs, they're talking about things like putting up plexiglass barriers, in some of the living spaces. They're not doing the most important thing they're not doing is they're not releasing prisoners. And they're also not taking any measures to prevent transmission inside prisoners who are housed inside dorms. There are some dorms where 90% of the prisoners have caught the coronavirus. So, that's really the action that needs to happen. And you really can't permit effective social distancing unless you actually start to release some of the prisoners. San Quentin's, above its listed capacity right now. It's severely overcrowded. And, that's the action that really needs to happen. And, CDCR is not doing that.
So this weekend, you're calling for the release of prisoners?
Yes, we are calling for the release of prisoners. The demands of the rally are to release prisoners who are elderly, prisoners whose sentences are close to being over, and prisoners who have not been convicted of a violent crime. We definitely believe that the Department of Corrections should release more than these categories, but that would be an important start.
Arthur, I'm going to have another couple of questions for you because of your lived experience in the prison system in just a minute. But Richard, for our listeners who want to support this effort, for those who will hear it after the caravan has already taken place, because this will air tomorrow night, what can they do?
Were you saying what can listeners who want to do something after tomorrow, after the caravan is over, what can they do?
Correct, because this will air after it's already happened. So what can they do to support the efforts, even after the fact?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things that, KPFA listeners can do is actually, support our brothers and sisters who are incarcerated, including, political prisoners, such as Chip Fitzgerald, who, if I'm not mistaken, Arthur, is the longest serving political prisoner, in the prison system today. These are men and women who have been, fighting against mass incarceration and police brutality for decades and have paid the price for doing so and are facing execution because of the coronavirus. And I think that's definitely one thing that, you know, JPFA listeners could do. We also have a number of social media channels, as well as a web page. I don't have that information in front of me, so if you could give me a sec, I'll look that up.
Sure. And really quick, while you're looking it up, so in the spirit of supporting people like political prisoners and others who should be released, how do they do that? Do you want them to be pressuring or communicating with Governor Newsom? How do they support?
Well, I think that's something that actually Arthur has been doing for a long time, so maybe he could speak to that.
Okay, Arthur, your turn. So what do you think, what would you like, how could listeners support people who've been incarcerated in getting out or rallying for them to get out sooner?
Well, I think primarily what people can do is make sure this stuff comes out of the dark. So we have in this country, or in this state particularly, probably the rest of the country, but a prison system that's full of people who do, keeping people in cages. And after they retire from that part of the prison system work, they generally go right into parole. And so the people who spent their careers keeping people in prison are then made the people who should determine who comes out of prison. And when it's people who just have this experience, then they're deemed to be the people who should make some critical assessments on people who should come out of prison. The law says that the boys should be a cross section of the community. It is anything but. It's over 90% of law enforcement. But the thing that I would really ask people to do is write the governor, your congressman, or woman, or whoever represents you, and give an accounting for why should somebody who's been eligible for parole for 44 years not be paroled, who's had a stroke, who gets around partly on a cane on good days, and on bad days he gets around in a chair.
Arthur, I'm going to have you back up a little bit. Are you talking about the political prisoner that Richard mentioned?
Yeah, okay. Romaine Fitzgerald.
Okay, great. Tell us about Romaine Fitzgerald and how long he's been in prison, why he needs to be out, all of that.
He's been in prison for 50 years, 8 months. Be 51 years in October 9th. He had a stroke 19 years ago. He had a rules violation just the time of his last parole hearing, and the rules violation is in itself quite interesting, in that it was for possession of a cell phone. And I don't know if people know it or not, but there's no cell phone facilities in prison. You cannot buy one in prison. The only way you can get a cell phone in prison is if a staff member brings them in. They're the only people that's not searched. And so for that cell phone, they gave him an additional 5 years when he came to the board last with 49 years. So that's just a particular case. But in general, that people who are, they're being held because of their politics. He's held because he's was a member of the Black Panther Party, and the real proof of that is the fact that in preparation for his last hearing, they was talking about he was not suitable because he was a member of the Black Panther Party. And this is something that is not in, it's not ever been contested. He was a member of the Black Panther Party when he was 19 years old. We were both the same age, both in the party. So that is just, it's nuts to keep this person locked up for this long.
For more than five decades. What was the, are you able to share what the original charge was?
He had two charges. He had a shooting with Highway Patrol, where he was shot in the head and the Highway Patrolman was shot. And later, he got away from that scene and he was treated. The bullet didn't go into his skull. And he had a murder of a security guard in a separate shooting. So he went to prison. His sentence was commuted to life with the possibility of parole, which meant that he became eligible for parole in 1976. First time he was at the parole board, and they have denied him ever since. And interestingly enough, there are people, and I think anybody who's done 50 years, 40 years has done enough time. So I'm not saying that these people should be kept in jail, but the people in the Manson case have been repeatedly found suitable for parole. And their original sentences were for helter-skelter trying to start a race war. Again, I think they've done enough time. I think people change. And it's really important to understand that people are not animals, that just it's impossible that they would ever change. And Chip has a lot of, we called him Chip. He has a lot of history and writings and things that the psychiatrists say that are different than what the parole board is saying. And we just are finding that out because we finally got some investigation going into that history of him being locked up. He's got many programs, the baking, it was a baker in prison. He's done a lot of work toward having something to do when he gets out, but heck, he's 71 years old now.
That was my next question. And I'm also wondering how you feel about the irony, I can guess, but I'm more interested in your words. The irony of this, it sounds like he shot a security guard or a police officer and gets half a century. Meanwhile, police officers were at this critical moment in time where maybe for the first time there might be some accountability, but we've seen this narrative over and over where they might serve 11 months or they might just get parole. And so what does that double standard, what does that mean to you? What do you want people to think about in terms of the double standards around this and who is being imprisoned and who's not?
Well, here's how I look at it, and this is the irony to me, that the police who are even found that they have acted improperly in the death of people, in the long run, end up with a pension. So we continue to pay them throughout the remainder of their lives in terms of their pension. The accountability is over with, and people like Chip and there are 15 remaining people from that era in prison, and it comes up to hundreds of years. Here in California, the longest two people in that category are in prison. It's Rochelle McGee and Romaine Fitzgerald, and together they're about 105 years if you put how much time they're both done. It's more than that, it's about 107 years. And these police who kill people get a pension, get to hang out with their grandchildren, get to sit on the rocking chair. And the people who put their lives in the way of the bullets in the interest of people who tried to stop them years ago, beginning with just observing them. And they got so upset about being observed that they turned their guns on the members of the Black Panther Party. And we simply refuse to allow people to kill us. And I don't know if it's just simple like that, but we wasn't going to let people kill us. And it's time to...
It sounds like returning fire after somebody was being shot at. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Well, he was shot in behind his left ear in a traffic stop for a taillight, supposedly, that was bad. And for some reason, shooting started. Fortunately, for all the forces are good, that bullet did not go into his skull and kill him. And he returned fire, and the Harbor Patrolman was injured, like he was injured. And, it's not like I don't need to make any excuses for anything.
If you go to his
website, he'll tell you what happened. He admits to what happened. And his website is freedom4chip.org.
Freedom4chip.org, for sure. And I appreciate in explaining, you're illuminating further just the double standard that there is, where it's okay. And so I appreciate that. Thank you. Is there anything else you wanted to say about this case?
No, I would just ask people to look into it. Go to the website. He's writing, psychiatrist writing. There's a lot of information there. Michelle Alexander has written on his behalf. Professionals all over the country have written on his behalf. And I would just encourage people to go to that website.
And in the meantime, Richard, you are checking on one more piece of information. Did you want to share that with us?
Yes. So we have a Facebook and an Instagram. It's at No Justice Under Capitalism. And there's also a Twitter feed, which is at Under Capitalism. So people can go to those accounts in order to find out more information. And, one thing that I forgot to mention, a number of us have spent many years, working with a prisoner in San Quentin by the name of Kevin Cooper, who was framed for a quadruple murder that he did not commit by the San Bernardino police. And Kevin has been quite vocal, in stating that, for many of the prisoners at San Quentin, COVID-19 is effectively, the execution that so far has been forestalled for all the prisoners on death row. And that's the slogan for our rally, No State Execution by COVID-19. So I just wanted to add that.
Thank you so much. And before you go, Richard, I know you've been at this work for a long time. Arthur, it sounds like you've spent your lifetime at this work. The progress is extremely slow, and some of the same patterns that existed back when you were imprisoned, Arthur, are still present as we're seeing. What keeps you both fighting in the face of the slow pace we're moving at?
You want to go first, Arthur?
You say, how do you keep fighting?
Yeah, what keeps you fighting? What gives you hope? What keeps you going?
Hell, it could have been me. I could be the one sitting there. And, these are my friends, my comrades, people who took the brunt of the stuff that the state meted out, and they did it voluntarily to serve the community and to serve the people. How could you not? I don't know how you you not do understand these folks coming out, because you know what their sacrifice was.
Thank you, Richard.
Well, for me, I think the events of the last few weeks, have been, a vindication of all the work that, different activists have done over the years. I think the people of this country, the working people of this country, recognize what an outrage and an injustice our system of mass incarceration is, as well as our policing system, and they're finally deciding to do something about it. So I'm very encouraged by what I've been seeing, and I hope it continues.
Okay, I'm almost ready to let you two go. Is there any final thing you wanted to add before we end our conversation today?
Sharon, I just wanted to say that, I saw an email by Ann Garrison where she was saying that you were doing all of this on your own time, despite having a job, like a regular day job. So I just wanted to say thank you for taking the time.
I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. It's hard work. Yeah. I love it. They don't pay us, but I'm doing it all remotely and I really care. So thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it really matters. So yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Malik, Arthur, thank you for having us on.
Yeah, Arthur, thank you so much. And thank you for kind of giving us a more of an inside view on, what the scoop is in the prison, and for illuminating these two prison cases as well as others.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Stay safe.